Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And tonight we're going to explore one of the most controversial UFO encounters in the abduction history. My guest tonight is going to be Travis Walton. He's coming to us from Snowflake, Arizona, and in November 1975 to be exact, Travis and six other men were in the Sid Greaves National Forest performing some work that they were doing there. And as they were heading back to their town, they encountered a UFO in the forest. And Travis was literally knocked off his feet by this UFO, and that launched the beginning of a five-day period of missing time where Travis was nowhere to be found. So before we go any further, we're going to get Travis on the line with us. Good evening, Travis.
Oh, Michael.
Good evening. Thank you for being on the program with us.
Yeah, nice to be with you.
Travis, this story goes back to 1975, which is, what, 19 years ago. For our listeners, what can you tell us about the what led up to it? Give us a little idea of what happened.
Oh, you mean the day that this happened?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, there were seven of us working in the woods, ordinary work day, a lot of hard sweat, and at the end of the day, we packed up our chainsaws and got into the truck. It was a double cab truck, so all seven of us were able to ride in one vehicle. And as we were leaving the area, we saw a strange glow coming through the trees. And at first, we just thought it might be, you know, a forest fire or maybe a crashed plane or something. But it was kind of strange, but it didn't really, you know, hit us like it did when we got around these trees and could actually see the source of this light. It was unmistakable. There, you know, hovering above the trees there was a disc-shaped object. And one of the men yelled out, it's a spaceship or something like that right off. I mean, it was unmistakable. This was not some distant, hazy, glowing ball of gas or something. This was, you know, a clearly definable object.
But not a fixed-wing aircraft.
Not at all.
Absolutely not.
It was circular in the, well, disc-shaped and sort of angular in its construction. And it was given off of sort of a strange golden sort of light. Kind of like the color of molten metal coming out of a blast furnace.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a white hot sort of look.
Mm-hmm.
I'd assumed that when we saw this thing that it was just going to be gone in an instant. So somebody yelled out, stop the truck, and as the crew boss stopped the truck, I threw open the door and started towards this thing, you know, thinking it would be gone right away. And the closer I got, I, you know, could see that it wasn't leaving, so that kind of made me feel, you know, a little bit scared about getting close to this thing.
What made you get out of the truck, Travis? I mean, you weren't frightened of it or anything?
Well, yeah, I was scared, probably as scared as any of them. But, you know, it was just the way I was back then. I guess I was grandstanding for the guys a little bit. You know, we'd seen wild animals in the woods before, you know, and it was just something that, you know, I was curious,
mm-hmm.
and plus I thought it'd leave, you know, that it would just go as quick as I came.
So you went directly up to it.
Yeah, and it was making a strange sound, sort of a mechanical turbine sort of a noise, and the guys in the truck were yelling at me to get away from there, and you know, I slowed down, you know, just to a walk by the time I got there because I was thinking I'd better not be doing what I was doing. But just as I got close, the sound it was making suddenly got more powerful, and it started to move a little bit. So that startled me, and I jumped down behind the end of a log that was sticking out of the slash pile there,
mm-hmm.
For cover. And I, you know, the guys were saying, get away from there, you know. They were really, you know, scared by the way it seemed to be getting ready to do something. And I decided, yeah, I better get out of there. And as I raised up, wham, something hit me. It was just kind of an electric shock, kind of a numbing feeling that hit me as I blacked out. But the guy said they saw a powerful bolt of energy come out of the bottom of this craft and hit me in the upper body and send me flying back through the air. They said it looked like an explosion, like a grenade had gone off in front of me.
Wow.
And they thought I'd been killed.
It did knock you off your feet. It completely moved you, what, 10 feet?
Yeah. They said it really sent me flying.
Now, you don't remember... you remember?
I just felt the shock. And
that was it.
I don't know what happened after that until I woke up. You know, it was apparently on board this craft. But I didn't know that at first. I came to kind of slowly, and I was kind of like in and out. And I was in a lot of pain. And kind of my vision was blurry at first. But when I finally got my senses a little bit, I saw these creatures standing over me. I just flipped out. I just became hysterical and lashed out at them and knocked them away from me.
Mm-hmm. Shame.
Well, they came towards me, and I managed to, I guess, scare them off. I don't know. They all turned and left the room at one time. And I was afraid they would come back, so I went looking for a way out.
Okay. Why don't we stop there? We're going to have to go to a break here. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-UFO-2009. My guest tonight is Travis Walton. He's he had a very unusual experience that we are going to get deeper into. But give us a call if you have anything you'd like to ask him or comments that you might have about this. And when we come back, we're going to find out what happened next when he realized that he was not in a hospital. My guest tonight is Travis Walton. And 1975, November 1975, Travis and six other men who were working in the Sitgreaves National Forest had a very unusual encounter. And before we go back to Travis, I want to point out a couple of things about this experience that you may or may not know. First of all, this is an abduction experience or an abduction case, but it is unlike most abduction cases that we hear about today, simply because of several factors. One of them, Travis was not... taken from a car or his bedroom or any of the classical places that a lot of abductees are taken from. This seems to be an accidental encounter, something that was not anticipated by either the UFO itself or whoever was on board and Travis and his buddies as well. Last year in March, the story was told in a screenplay by Tracy Torme called Fire in the Sky. And Travis is now telling us about what happened when he awoke aboard this thing. Now, by the way, 1978, Travis did publish a book called The Walton Experience, and I have read that book. And the book is very interesting. It details, you know, some of the feelings that Travis had when he awoke and aboard the craft, thinking he was first in the hospital. And I guess that's where we left off, Travis, was when you woke up. Apparently, you saw these creatures there.
Yeah, it was quite a shock, you know, thinking that I was, you know, being taken care of, and then all of a sudden to see this strange face that, you know, was just like nothing I'd ever seen before. And, you know, combining that with the feeling of pain, I just flipped out. I just became hysterical and stayed pretty much that way.
Uh-huh. Describe the beings that you saw, the creatures that you saw when you woke up.
Well, they were humanoid. You know, by humanoid, I mean like two arms, two legs, a face, you know, but they were hairless and had large craniums, very large eyes, and kind of a chalky, whitish, grayish white sort of look to their skin.
Are they similar to the beings that are described by abductees today?
Yeah, apparently. You know, I don't follow a lot of that, but, you know, I understand that that's the case.
Uh-huh. Okay. We're going to go to line one. Bob from Denver on KNUS. Bob, good evening.
Yes, good evening, Mike. One of the most extraordinary and educational services that is being done in this country. Thank you for all the people listening in.
Thank you.
Travis?
Yeah.
Yes, do you recall talking on the telephone? It's been 19-some years since your event, but do you recall talking on the telephone to a man named Bruce Chinberg, who had an experience just one day after yours, but in the Susanville, Litchfield, California area in the Skedaddle Mountains? He and his friend were chased down a mountain. They were driving down the mountain in a truck. They were chased by a UFO. And he was so impressed by the proximity and time of his experience to yours that he called you on the telephone shortly afterward. And he says both of you discussed whether yours and his UFO were possibly the same one.
Well, I vaguely remember something like that, but, you know...
You vaguely remember it? At the time, they had called out the sergeant detective in that area, who came over with his sergeant's detective kit, a photographic kit, and from three or four separate locations photographed the UFO from different points. And some investigators that I'm associated with and myself were in the process of analyzing those photographs. But by the time the sergeant detective arrived at the scene, the UFO had risen in the sky so high that it was almost at the level of the grain of the film. However, we did enlarge the photographs.
Was there, caller, was there anything similar to... this then, how does this kind of link up to Travis's experience?
In time, it was one day after Travis's experience, and that was what was so interesting about the case that the chief witness had.
Being so far away is probably why it didn't really, you know, stick in my mind. But
yes,
there were a number of sightings in the local area here. You know, some hunters and people that saw some pretty amazing things right at that time.
Yes.
And so, you know, I attached a lot more significance to that because of the distance.
So, Travis, there were reports in your area as well then that substantiate the activity in the area.
Yeah.
I see.
And, you know, some of those people didn't really come forward until years later. But, you know, it would have been nice if they had said something at the time.
Okay, thank you, Travis. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for the call. Travis, now go back to the experience on board. Now I know that, for example, the movie only carried the actual experience you had was only what, 2 hours that you can remember out of the 5 days.
Probably less than that.
Less than that.
It's hard to estimate when you're in that state of mind.
Sure, sure. There was something extraordinary that happened though next when the beings left the room, and you were looking for a way out. Can you go pick up there and take us through that?
Well. I was just so scared that I was willing to try anything.
Sure.
And I just took off running through this craft, and I came to a room that had some doorways, or the outline of doorways, on the opposite wall. And there was a really strange effect in this room, because as I entered it, it would darken, and I could see stars in all directions, you know, floor, ceiling, walls.
Mm-hmm.
And I stepped back, you know, because that's kind of scared me, and the effect would diminish. So somehow it had to do with my position in the room. But I didn't really, you know, recognize any constellations or anything like that. It was just a star pattern. I couldn't, you know, tell you what it,
mm-hmm.
whether it was the same as what we see at night or here or not. But it was very odd effect there.
Now, you were encountered at this point by another being, is that true?
Yeah. And this is really strange, you know, to see another person that looked to be human.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of an odd thing, you know, that in so many accounts of my experience that have been, you know, retold in various places, this is just kind of like glossed over or forgotten or something. It's really strange to me because, you know, this could be the key to the whole thing.
Well, okay, pick up there.
Well, they looked human. They looked, they could pass in a crowd on Earth, and, you know, and I thought it was some sort of a government agency intervening, you know, on my behalf
to
get me out of here, and that's what I assumed at first.
It was a male being that you saw then, right?
Yeah.
Describe him.
Well, he was tall, well-built, sort of a blondish hair, and something odd about the eyes I never could quite place. But he was wearing a helmet over his head and a blue uniform. And I was taken out of this craft, and I went with him because I thought I was being saved, you know. But he took me to some other people who were like him, and I kept asking questions, and I'd kind of given up on him because I figured maybe he couldn't hear me because of the helmet.
He never spoke to you then at any time, did he?
No. But, you know, at first I thought, well, maybe, you know, he can't talk inside of that thing, or he can't hear me, or something like that. But the people that he took me to weren't wearing helmets, so I started over with them, and they weren't any more responsive. And then when they started trying to put me down and lay me down on this table, I started to try to fight back.
Okay.
There's too many of them.
Okay, now this case for me personally is a very, very important one because it shows some different features to this than what we're experienced to having. This was actually an accidental encounter. And Travis was telling us last segment about the human-looking male that he encountered and actually the other humans that were involved in this. Travis, as the years have passed since the event, have you been able to recall additional information, you know, details about what happened to you?
Well, I can't say that I have, you know.
I know that when you got back after this 5 days, and there's just not going to be enough time in this hour to talk about all of this, but there was an intense manhunt that was launched, and it came to the point where there was actually allegations that your co-workers had actually murdered you.
Yes.
And when you came back 5 days later, it touched off such a flurry of problem that you were plunged into quite a mess. But I do understand that Dr. James Harder had worked with you.
Yeah, I was hypnotically regressed.
And you reached a certain point in your regression that you just could not get past, like a barrier of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go into a little detail about that?
Well, it was pretty deep, and I guess apparently, you know, I don't know whether this is my own subconscious fears. I mean, there were different opinions by the various doctors and people that were there as to what the significance of that was, whether it was a post-hypnotically planted suggestion, or that maybe this would really actually occur, that I would die if I went deeper, or if it was just an expression of my own fears of, for some reason.
I can imagine you've been through an incredible amount. I admire your courage that you display. I know you've been chastised, you've been, you know, called probably every name in the book, and you've been grilled and just, you know, treated very, very badly. But, you know, I think it's very important that you did come forward to talk about this. Has anything unusual happened in your present life that you might attribute to your experience?
Well, you know, I had so much negative flack on account of what happened back then. You know, it was something that I didn't come forward with. I had no choice. You know, I came back thinking that it was the same night. I didn't know 5 days had gone by. I didn't know there had been a murder investigation or any of this stuff. It was already all over the world before I even knew anything. And, you know, it caused me such problems that I'd have to say that, you know, if I were to recall more of what happened, I'd be foolish to
talk about it,
to discuss it, because it would just, you know, open up a big can of worms.
Okay. Let's go to our phones again. We have Brian from Lakewood, Colorado, listening to us on KNUS. Brian, are you there?
Yeah, sure am.
What's your question for our caller?
Well, a couple of questions. Travis, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned that the when you saw these aliens, they were wearing helmets. And you also said that they were blonde. How could you tell they were blonde if they had helmets on? What kind of helmets were they?
Well, it was a transparent helmet. question. Is it just sort of a bubble helmet?
A clear bubble?
Yeah.
Kind of like an Apollo suit or something?
Kind of like a fishbowl or something, I don't know.
Really?
Just a transparent. It might have been frosted on the rear portion, but it was, you know, pretty much transparent.
So you were pretty much, you had pretty much woken up at this time? You were able to identify a lot of this?
Yeah.
Now, the movie Fire in the Sky, I've heard that the section that was done on board the ship was considerably different than what you actually recall, and it was kind of surrealistic from kind of a Hollywood effects type of thing. Is that true? I mean, how much liberty did they take with what actually happened?
They took quite a bit of liberty, you know, and you know, it leaves you with the same sort of emotions, you know, as what we went through back then. But as far as documenting what actually occurred, it's far from that.
It's far from that, you say?
Yeah, far from documenting the actual events on board. But, you know, the feelings that it evokes, you know, the terror, the feelings of suffocation, the pain, you know, all those sorts of things are, you know, accurately portrayed.
Okay, all right. Okay, we've got to move on to another call. We've got Brother John on line two in Santa Barbara. He's listening to us on KNRY. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. Very interesting program as usual.
Thank
I had
you.
The pleasure of meeting Travis Walton several months ago in San Francisco, and I enjoyed that very much. My question is, at the point when you, 5 days after your initial encounter, when you finally got back to quote-unquote civilization, how much of the whole experience did you actually have a conscious recall, and how did the rest of your memory sort of come back to you?
Well, the brief conscious period that I related in the book in 78 was basically what I recalled when I regained consciousness on the roadway there. But it was just so traumatic for me that I had never actually been able to relate the entire thing until the hypnosis. And that was the main thing that was accomplished there, was just to be able to let me relive this without this incredible terror that, you know, I couldn't talk about it. I'd just break down. So, you know, the memories that came out under hypnosis were the same as what I woke up with on the roadway there, but, you know, it's just just a small portion of what I of the time I was missing.
Yes, I can hardly hear you, but what I'm wondering about is your description of the craft that you initially saw. How did that compare with the descriptions of the other friends that also saw the craft? Was it pretty consistent, or was there some variability?
There were, you know, naturally slight variations. You know, all the guys do their own sketches, and like, for instance, in the original police report, one of the men describes the beam as being a long blue flame. You know,
uh-huh.
And others, you know, kind of like a beam of, like a laser beam, and some like a lightning bolt, but, you know,
right.
Basically a brilliant shaft of energy there was the main thing, you know. And, you know, they kind of got together on the illustration that was produced there. And there was, you know, general agreement about the accuracy of it.
Okay. John, thank you for your call. We're going to have to
move
along.
Thank you very much. Very interesting.
Travis, I have one other question before we let you go, before we go to break, and you're going to be leaving us. What is your opinion of the massive numbers of present-day so-called abduction cases, you know, contrasts and everything? Do you have any opinion on those?
Well, you know, it's kind of a strange thing. You know, my method of coping with all this was to sort of, you know, shy away from the subject, to stay back from it, to just try to get on with my life and try to shut it out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really pretty ignorant about a lot of what's gone on. You know, to me, it's quite astounding when I hear some of the numbers involved. And you do have to, you do have to realize that it can't all be substantial, you know, events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's obviously going to be a percentage of people that are deluded or
sure.
or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see these tabloid stories with these ridiculous photos of aliens with presidential candidates,
well,
that sort of thing, and you know that really it kind of upsets me when I see that kind of stuff because it seems to me to be add to the air of ridiculousness around this to where the genuine, solid, real-life cases sort of get this spillover of this air of ridiculousness, this ha-ha attitude that is not appropriate. There's something serious going on.
Okay, well, with that, we'll have to make that the last word. Travis, I want to thank you for joining us, and I'd like to have you back on again sometime to talk a little bit more in depth about this.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, and take care.
Yeah.
Okay.